Well, it's good to see you all again. I hope you enjoyed your snowcation this past week. Sadly, because of 3 feet of snow and the inability to get a parking lot cleared, we couldn't have Mass last weekend. So I decided to reward you by giving last week's homily first, followed by this week's. Only kidding. But we do have to strike a deal. We lost a collection last weekend, so I'm counting on your extra generosity this weekend. So with that in mind, we have a couple of other announcements. You're probably still wondering why our Christmas decorations are up. As you've probably read in the bulletin, hopefully, there's an old tradition that these stay up until February 2nd, the Feast of the Presentation of the Lord, when 40 days after Jesus' birth, Mary and Joseph brought baby Jesus to the temple to make a sacrifice of thanksgiving for the gift of their child. So enjoy them now. They go away on Tuesday after Mass. And then the last announcement is, by command of the bishop, that the bishop's Lenten appeal information has been released. You may have received it in the mail already. Please take time to look at it, ponder it, and make your donation. You'll hear more about it next week. You are forewarned. So, with that in mind, we look at our beautiful passage from St. Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 13. We hear about love. This is one of those epistles that is often selected for weddings, for good reason. In a way, though, we should appreciate it as a spiritual examination for each one of us. To appreciate that, though, we have to understand the context in which it was written. St. Paul visited this town of Corinth on what was his second missionary journey, about the year 50. Now, Corinth is situated on what is called the Isthmus of Corinth, so this four-mile strip of land that connects Upper Greece with Lower Greece. So on one side of this four-mile strip of land is the Aegean Sea, and the other side is the Adriatic. So immediately, Corinth becomes a very important international trade city because it's the easiest way to get goods from the Adriatic Sea, from Italy, through Greece, over to areas of what would be Asia Minor. So an important city, a wealthy city, prosperous city, an international city. One could liken it to like a New York City, not to get into the fray of politics, but you could find anything in Corinth. They had beautiful temples. So they had a temple to the god Poseidon, the god of the sea. There was a temple to the god of Aphrodite, the goddess of love. And there were 1,000 sort of slave girls that served that temple so gentlemen could make their acts of love to Aphrodite, if you know what I mean. And then there was the beautiful amphitheater that seated 18,000. And even a smaller one. Huge marketplace with all this international trade. There's a little synagogue. So there's Jewish community, very old. And St. Paul preached in that synagogue. But also, there's a little Christian community. So that's the first context. Keep in mind, very much like the culture in which we live, you could find anything in Corinth. In many ways, is also known as Sin City. To be known as a Corinthian girl was not a compliment. Well, St. Paul went there, but then St. Paul learns that after establishing this little Christian community that seemed so faithful, all these problems arose. So he spends 12 chapters, the first 12 chapters in First Letter to the Corinthians, just chastising them for tolerating a man who's living in an incestuous union, a man living in adultery, other sexual sins. He chastises them for still participating in pagan idol sacrifices and banquets. He chastises them for having little cliques and factions within the church. He chastises them because they've had fights among themselves, and instead of settling them in a Christian way, they go to the pagan law courts. So St. Paul blasts them for 12 chapters. And then he says, now I will show you the greatest way, and that is the way of love. But that brings us to another important contextual point, the word love. In English, we use the word love in so many ways. I'm sure some of you kids have said, I love snow. I can say, parents, I don't say that, I'm sure, especially if you have to shovel. But then I, for myself, could say, well, I love my rose bush. I love my piano. I love pizza. I love a good porterhouse steak with a glass of Cabernet Sauvignon Sterling Vineyard Gray Label. I love my mom. Different kind of love, though, right? I love my brother. Different from mom. I love my parish. I love my God. All different kinds of love for one word. Well, the Greeks had three words. One was philia, friendship love, hence Philadelphia. And there was eros, more of a possessive, self-exerting kind of love, hence erotic. But then there was agape, and that's God's love. It's faithful, self-giving, self-sacrificing. That's the word that's used here. It's the word that's used primarily through sacred scripture, referring to God's love. So we have to keep all of this in mind, because just like the little church of Corinth, in many ways we face the same situation, but we're called to set our hearts on the greatest spiritual gift, and that is to love. So for each of us, a good challenge would be is to just take time at some point, whether at this Mass or later, to go through and ask ourselves, am I patient? Am I kind? Am I jealous? Am I pompous? Am I inflated? Am I rude? Do I seek my own interests? Do I have a quick temper? All these are qualities that St. Paul says love is or is not. So go back, reread it, because these are the little basic qualities of that Christian love we're called to have. But only then can we go even higher. Notice what St. Paul says. St. Paul says that love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Here is that faithful, self-giving, self-sacrificing love. This is the love that the saints, especially the martyrs, witness to in their very lives. Because of their belief in Jesus, that faithful love, they were willing to endure, to persevere, to suffer, and have the hope that somehow everything was going to work out for good. Apply it to our own lives. Isn't this the love that you and I need? That I need as a priest? Of course. That you need, especially if you're married? Absolutely. Who of you who aren't married doesn't at times have to make the sacrifices? That's real love. That's why the marriage vows say, good times, bad, sickness and in health. And so we have to consider parents. Think of the sacrifices parents make. The parent who stays up all night with a child who's sick. A parent who sacrifices certain pleasures, material comforts, trips, so a child can have a good education. All of that is love. We shouldn't forget that. Real love is sacrificial love. I think of a couple I knew in my old parish, and they had been married 70 years. That's mind-boggling. 70 years. They were married when they were just teenagers in Lithuania. Well, they knew what that love was about, because they had to flee the Soviet Union, then they had to flee the Nazis. They came to this country with nothing, raised a family, educated them, also buried one of their children, buried one of their grandchildren. And they went through the whole course of life that anyone goes through, financial problems, medical problems, personal problems, and yet 70 years of marriage. And I've buried both of them. And both of them truly loved each other. But that love was founded on their love for Jesus. So this is the love that St. Paul wants us to have. If we live those virtues, here's the next step. But take it further. St. Paul says that love does not brood over injuries. All of us know what it's like to be hurt, but in love, we forgive. I've known couples that have had some very difficult times because one made a mistake, infidelity. It takes great grace to be able to forgive, to see beyond that injury and see a greater good, good of the love they've invested in each other, the love for children, the love for a future, and the love that can bring happiness in the future. Yes, it takes great grace to forgive such a hurt. The devil always wants us to brood, to think about all these hurts, and to replay them in our mind, allow the vengeful thoughts, hurtful thoughts, ill will, desire thoughts, whatever it may be, enter into our soul. If any of us has such thoughts, then when we say the Our Father and we come to forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, we should keep Jesus in mind, imaging him in our mind on that cross and hearing him say, as he did, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. That is love, and that's a love we're called to have. Take it further. St. Paul says, love does not rejoice over wrongdoing, but rejoices with truth. How important this is in our world today. At the Last Supper, Jesus said, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Live in my love. You'll live in my love if you keep my commandments. Love and truth reflect each other because God is love. God is truth. To say I love means I have to live by God's truth. We live in a world where the abnormal has become the new normal, where the falsehood seems to become the politically correct kind of truth, where those who speak about toleration are really the most intolerant to anyone who disagrees. Those who speak about inclusivity are the most exclusive to those who disagree. That's our world. But as Christians, we have to uphold the truth. Never should we rejoice in what is wrong, what is false. How sad it would be if we rejoiced over a person who successfully cheats, steals, commits adultery. How sad it would be, especially during this time of the nauseating political primary season, if we rejoiced in a candidate who supports Planned Parenthood, that diabolical organization that has no respect for human life, or even the remains of human life. Or if we rejoiced in the whole idea of same-sex marriage and the Supreme Court who struck down the very definition, thereby opening the definition to anything. As Justice Scalia said, it's like fortune cookie jurisprudence. Never should we rejoice that an Army veteran who lost a leg and an arm, his name's Noah Galloway, was passed over for the Arthur Ashe Award that was given to Bruce Jenner, who now thinks he's Caitlyn Jenner because he has an identity conflict with the body that God gave him. Life with the Kardashians does not do one good for one's soul. We have to consider, my brothers and sisters, love rejoices in what is true in God's eyes. To rejoice in falsehood denies that love. So we are called to a real challenge here. We talk about love a lot, and we use that word a lot. But you and I are called to love as God loves, faithful, self-giving, self-sacrificing love. That's the love that Jesus showed us. If we strive to live that love, aided by the grace of prayer, the Holy Eucharist, frequent confession, then our lives will better know the love of Jesus. Marriages will be stronger in the love of Jesus. We will be united as families stronger in the love of Jesus. And that love that we know now will come to fulfillment when we behold the face of God face to face in heaven. May God bless you.